to the Lord, for he is good, for his love endures forever. Let the sons of Israel say, his love endures forever. I call to the Lord in my distress, and he answered and set me free. The Lord is at my side, I do not fear. What can man do against me? It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in men. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. They compassed me, they compassed me about.
Looking across, you see that Glenstall, above the village of Maroon, is really on a slope of rising hills, about 800 feet above sea level. The castle, so-called, is a kind of a fraud. It was built in around, began building in around 1833, and in imitation of a combination of Romanesque and Hibernico architecture. It was kind of a folly of its time, built by a Limerick family as a shooting lodge. It's not complete, and where the modern church is standing, that should have been part of the overall keep, including a chapel in the original designs. It's built like many other castles of its time, Adair, Lord Inchiquin's place, Dromoland, and so on. It was the style to do that type of restoration in the 1800s. And Glenstall has several square keeps and towers. One tower was added at the time that a similar tower was added to Windsor Castle. It was a fashion to do that type of thing. It's very romantic. The main doorway as you go in is in a romantic, Romanesque style with two figures, one of Henry II, the invader, and his wife Eleanor of Aquitaine. The date, 1169, is on that to give the impression that the castle dates from that time. They're carrying scrolls saying Cade Mille Fortia.
Glenstall Abbey is built on wooded parkland near the village of Maroo, about 9 miles from Limerick City. Glenstall Castle was for many years the residence of the Barrington family. In the 1920s, it became the property of the Benedictines, and a country estate was transformed into a Benedictine monastery. The Benedictines opened a school, now a famous secondary school. Glenstall is a boarding school, a boys' college, with about 180 students. Wednesday, March 30th, was the final day of term prior to the Easter holidays in 1977.
Shoes. Books. And a bit of work over the holidays. A couple of pairs of pajamas. Shirt. Poster. That should be it. My name is Kevin O'Sullivan, and I'm doing a leaving at the end of the year, and I intend to do science next year at university, and so I hope to specialise in biological sciences. Subjects I'm doing this year are physics and chemistry and maths.
So far in your life, I've been living in what I would call a shell. Everything has been done for me so far. I'm now 17 years of age, and I'm coming to, as you say, leaving school. It's going to be very different, I know, but I must say I look forward to it. It's going to be a different pattern of life. I'm going to be responsible for my own actions. I'm going to be responsible for myself.
I notice around the room here, around your little room here, you've got a lot of horses on the wall. Are you interested in horses?
I am very interested in them.
Tell me a little bit.
Well, I'm more or less interested in the thoroughbred breeding industry, racing, racehorses and that. Not so much in the equestrian horse, thoroughbred world, breeding and that. And that's what I hope to do when I leave school, actually. I'm not one of those going to university. In fact, most of the students in this sixth-year form will be going to university. But not with me.
Okay, so you're going to use colour now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I'll put colour on these here, the feathers in here, and put the colour of the sun, I suppose, yeah.
Yes, right. What colours have you got on this? You've got...
White.
And
black.
And black. Could you maybe have bigger areas of white?
Well, I could do the whole thing in white, but I don't think it'll do... Like, I mean, I could shade it all in colour and just...
And then what would happen?
Well, things might begin to
get lost.
Yeah.
Yes, sure. I think yes. Experiment now with colour and see.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing about the colour, I think, does happen.
Because
some of it will probably come off if it doesn't look well on.
Yeah. Well, I'll try it out first.
Okay. The only distinctive feature of this school, or really of any school, would be that one would go about achieving these objectives, perhaps in a slightly different way. And one can do that in a small school, I suppose, in a way that cannot be done elsewhere. In other words, if you take that the educational objective of any school is to get those who are in that school to make the most of whatever potential they have, which I think is what the educational objective is, people would differ as to how to define making the best of oneself. But if... And I would say, of course, that there is always a spiritual dimension to making the best of oneself, that one can never be fully oneself or never be the sort of person one should be without the touch of the spirit. But that's beside the point. It's how one goes about achieving an objective that would make a school different from another school. And there are inbuilt advantages in a small school in that one can go about this in a reasonably leisurely way, taking account of... the individuality of each boy in the school and trying to provide for him what he needs as an individual, obviously within the framework of an organized timetable. But one has tremendous freedom and flexibility. The smaller the school is, the smaller the classes are. And if the small boarding school such as this is has any real advantage, it's certainly in that area.
When I started with this, it was once a pillowcase. And... Now I got a pencil and I drew around it, and I drew a fish. And then I drew weeds on it, and I drew around the weeds. And I put little fish, like the big sharks, you'll see they have little fish to eat off any worms or anything on their backs. And I put lots of little fish around them. And then when this was finished, I got the teacher, Mr. Sutherland, to melt the wax, and he melted it. And at first it was too hot, and I stuck the paintbrush in, and the whole paintbrush melted. So I had to get a new paintbrush when it cooled down, and I stuck it in. And I painted around the lines I painted, or I'd drawn with pencil. And then when I had this done, I was all finished and ready, and the place where I had the pencil done was waxed. So then Mr. Sutherland got the dye made, and we stuck it in the dye. And then it came out, and you will see around these lines it is... all where the weeds and the fish is, that it's all white. And then we peeled off the white and set the place where we want to stay white. And we waxed different areas that we wanted to stay at that colour, red. And then we waxed that area and we stuck it into a different dye. And then we did red in this area and we had white there and we'll have blue then after that dye.
What I'd like you to do is to bring back, if you can, a T-shirt, a white T-shirt. Okay, white T-shirt to print on it. No, not batik. To print with silk screen. We're going to do batik, but not on. It doesn't really.
Yeah,
tights. We have material. We have special material for that.
And the kites.
Kites. If we get paper, we have the thing for printing the ties. But bring in a T-shirt, okay? Because I want everybody to make us one silk screen, fast, and to design. Okay, so will everybody? Everybody bring in a white... John.
White T-shirt.
A white T-shirt. Okay. Good luck in your test.
Thank you very much. Happy Easter, sir. Happy Easter, sir.
They're very pleasant people to deal with. There's no doubt about that. The basic relationship between the staff and the boys here is excellent. Now, whether that's because of the virtue of the boys or the virtue of the staff, I'm not quite sure. Probably partly...
the boys and partly the staff. They're certainly, both parties are contributing to it. It's certainly not the result of any specific charism on the part of the staff. It's certainly a two-way traffic. But there is an openness, I admit that certainly, and it's one of the things which makes life pleasant here. There are not many unpleasant encounters in the round of the day.
I'm Desmond Beattie, and I'm going to Belgium next term, for the whole term, and a Belgian boy is coming here to Glenstall. I'll be leaving this Sunday after Easter Sunday for about two or three months, and now the place is Marit Sue. It's called Marit Sue. It's a Benedictine monastery, and it's south of a big city in Belgium called Namur. And I fly to Brussels and take a train to Namur with all the Marit Sue boys, so I'd meet them before I arrive at the school. I'm not sure what happens to the boy who's coming over here. I think he just flies to Dublin and takes a train down again with the Glenstall boys. It's one of the aspects of the school, in fact, because as well as myself just going to Marit Sue, there's two boys going to France to different schools, and there's a number of boys going to Germany. I myself may be going on to Germany when the Belgian term ends and finish off the German term, because the German term goes on until the end of July. I'll be going to a place called St. Ottilien, which is near Munich, and one of the boys from here will already be there, but hopefully we'll be speaking no English. At least we better not speak any English.
What is the purpose of this exchange?
Well, the purpose of the exchange is to be able to, you know, get a basic knowledge of the language, both French and German, I wouldn't mind getting a decent honour in my leaving, but I basically go to learn the language, to be able to speak the language.
My name is Jérôme Le Soroy, I'm French, and I study English in Glenstall, and I'm returning back at the end of the term.
Why did you come to Glenstall? Why to this school rather than another school?
Oh, just because some friends, my brother came here before, and we knew that it's the only school a bit. I don't know really why I came here, but I think my school has some relation with that school.
How long have you been here?
So, 6 months, that's been 2 terms.
And you're going home tomorrow?
I am, yeah.
You're coming back again?
No, I don't think so. Perhaps in 2 years to see a bit everybody again, but no, not after.
You're going home for good tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going home for good tomorrow, yeah.
My name's Paul O'Brien. I have a beehive. I've paid about £30 for the hive, including all the equipment. I hope in about 2 years' time that I will be able to get bees and produce honey, which will give me back what I have paid for it. We have a lot of help from one of the brothers here, and it is part of the farm work, which is a part of the occupation that some of the boys do here. They go down to the farm and work with the hives. There's about 13 boys who have hives, and they all also work on the farm.
Five, two. 5-3.
Table tennis is very interesting. It's a good game. You have to have lots of skill, and you can have, like, some boys maybe bad at it, but they can learn from a professional. Well, a good boy, you can teach them a few things, and they become better and good, and then they can go off to clubs and join and so on. They can go over the world and everything like that and meet other people. And it's educational in a sense way. And I myself, you know, I'm good, and I teach some boys who are bad, like, and you have to have very good backhand and forehand, like, I mean, some boys might give you a big high smash and you can just use your forehand and put it away, you know?
Normally, without extras, we cater for about 240 people, which keeps us rather busy. We have the occasional ups and downs, of course.
What will the score be today? Would you say Ireland would win? No?
It's your own dealer. 4-3.
I go back to sleep.
They're on 40, 50.
That's a draw.
Just give me a bit of a clamour.
Indoor soccer is usually played with about 5 or 6 members of the school. We pick teams. It's a great. It's one of the biggest occupations we have in the school. We play it every break we get, nearly. Quite a lot of us do. It's great for developing your skills because you have to be very good with the footwork. But it's also very exhausting. There's lots of soccer leagues which are made by the seniors, and we have competitions to find out which team are the best from big teams.
Is it one of the big games in Glenstall?
Well, it's not counted as big in the if you talk about big playing against other schools, but it's big for our fun. It's one of our best games to play. Nearly every boy in the school plays football in the gym.
I mean, seems to me to be very dangerous.
I don't know. We all go in hard, and if we get hit, that's, I suppose, we just get up again and get hit again. That's just part of the fun. You have to take it. Everybody else, every boy is prepared to do that.
What does end of term mean to you, nurse?
It's a great relief to me, the end of term, and especially this term, because this the Christmas term. This is Christmas or Easter term. This is Easter term. And the Easter term is always, we always have an epidemic of flu. So I have nearly every boy in bed with flu, and they sometimes they go back twice or three times with relapse. So it's great to get away. Marvellous to get away.
How would you feel if, in fact, at the end of term, some of the lads were in bed and sick and couldn't get home? Would you feel in some way that you were responsible? Or...
Oh, I often had to stay a few days extra, you know, if they're in bed sick. But their parents are quite good. They usually come along after a day or two and take them home after a day or 2 days anyway. The very most I've ever spent here, you know, with boys in bed.
What is life like in the infirmary?
Pretty dull at the moment, actually. There's not much to do. You can watch television at night, but during the day, all you have to do is convalesce, lie back, take things easy. If you're very sick, you have to just lie down all day, but you can read a good supply of books and literature there to be read.
What is wrong with you?
I've sore throat and headache at the moment. I've slight temperature, but not very much.
Do you hope to get home tomorrow?
Oh, yes, I hope so.
How would you feel if you had to spend another week, say, in the infirmary?
I wouldn't feel too well about it. I think I'd take longer recovering that way.
When you come into the main hall then, you'll find that there are several archways giving the impression of an Italian interior castle. And the main hall itself is very simple, with arches and a very homey type of brick in the ceiling, flanked by ancient Irish elk, probably a few thousand years old, and a very noble marble stairway with a great deal of detail of corbels under the roof, which wouldn't normally be seen by visitors. Although it was a sham, they didn't go to great trouble to make it authentic in the actual building. Here then, leading into one of the main rooms, is a monastic doorway taken locally. And inside this room here then, we have a most unusual archway leading to the drawing room. And that is an imitation of the 11th century archway in the cathedral in Killaloe, about 11 miles away. We go on then to the drawing room itself, which is rather elaborate, as you can see. with large oaken beams in the ceiling and terraza-like work on top, and then a magnificent fireplace copied from an imitation of a west doorway of Iffley Cathedral. In here is what was originally a picture gallery, and rather modern in the sense that the light comes in from the ceiling to allow light on the paintings. And the floorway then is done like a Roman pavement in coloured brick, with the motto of the Barrington family and some good advice to speed the parting guest and welcome the coming guest. And for there we go on then. This, of course, is now used as one of the refectories for the boys.
You had paintings here on the walls at one stage.
We had some valuable paintings, and we didn't realise their value. Somebody by chance suggested they might be worth looking into. And when we realised they were valuable, we were afraid of the damage that was done from steaming cabbage and potatoes and so on, and decided that we couldn't afford insurance, so that we sold them and hoped to build part of the monastery with the proceeds. We then go on to what is the second refectory, which was originally the library of the castle. It's one of the big round towers that one sees on approaching the building. It's an eight-sided room. In the centre is a pier, a very large pier rising to the ceiling, and this has mirrored glasses in it, which reflects the light from the rather dull light of the windows. From the pier, you have capitals on top of each column, and then arches rising up and painted blue with stars to give the impression of paradise, as you find in medieval cathedrals in France or Italy. The woodwork is very interesting, and it all tapers in from the outside, the circular outside of the room, right into the centre, to this pier in the centre, and very fine woodwork it is.
When did you come to Glenstall?
Well, at first, in 1928, at the very beginning of the foundation, in January 1928. So I went back to Belgium in October to continue the study of philosophy and theology. Then I was sent back here in 1939 until April 42, and then went over as chaplain to the Belgian forces in the war, sent back here in December 45, and since then I'm here.
What do you do, Father?
Well, now I'm what we call a semi-pensioner, huh? Old age, helping here and there, and taking care of this hobby club, bicycles and woodwork and metalwork too. And then I do some little jobs in the farm, keeping the red tape, you know, the blue cards and all that kind of stuff. And well, that's about all. What else? Oh no, I'm taking care of the Old Boys Society, secretary of the Old Boys Society, keeping contact with all the old boys.
Well, you see, there was a fire there, and the chimney got hot, and it's sort of a makeshift chimney, and there's plastic inside the walls, and it started to burn. And we spent about £40 putting out the fire with the fire extinguishers, and the headmaster wasn't very pleased himself.
That wasn't the reason it was closed.
I mean, we were going to clear the place down here because the headmaster was getting a bit annoyed because it was becoming a bit of a dive. And we started off great.
What do you mean by a bit of a dive?
It was just sort of a den. Everybody come down here to just smoke their guts out and do nothing else, just laze around all day. So we started great. We cut down trees and everything. But then some people decided to have a rest and they had a smoke and they got caught. And that was sort of the last straw, really. And then it was closed.
Who built the shed? Would you call it a shed, or would I insult you in calling it a shed?
Oh, you would, yeah. Well, a hut. The 40s of 2 years ago built it. And they built it for a common room for themselves, and it was carried on then. Every 4th year had it after that.
But they never got to use it.
Like, they, by the time they'd built it, it was the end of the year, so it was passed on to the next year.
And you got it?
And we got, well, no, the last year, this is 2 years ago, it got built. And originally they were going to, like, they never really finished it, like, it was pretty makeshift.
And the furniture?
The furniture, well, that was, that was acquired from the school, bits and pieces of it, you know.
Half it went up the chimney. Burnt half.
Did you actually make the chairs yourself?
Chairs? No, we knocked them all off. I mean, we borrowed them from the school. Sort of, it doesn't really matter. Indefinite amount of time, as he says.
Yeah, we're borrowed from the actual place, but we've sort of moved ourselves outside, and we live out there now.
Have you erected another hut?
Oh, no, we just made a little corner over there in the trees.
You live in the open?
Yep. Yeah.
You're kind of
going back to the jungle, laws.
Well, the various aspects of wildlife here vary from the small birds, that's to say the garden birds, which you'll find anywhere really in Glenstall, in the deciduous or carnivorous woodland, right up then to the fallow deer, which you'll find in the surrounding hillsides, that's the Schlieffele Mountains. But there is, they do come down to the nearby bog, and the best time to see these would be in the morning, when groups of people can get up around about, at this time of the year anyway, around about 6:30, and they'll go up there and have a go at trying to get close to them, stalking them. And in that way, they learn the tricks of the trade, you know, for instance, how to avoid the wind. And generally, in trying to, it's more of a challenge than anything else, trying to stalk the deer and be able to watch it in its natural environment without disturbing it. You know, it's all very easy for anybody to go into a park and see a deer, but to be able to see them in the wild is quite an achievement, you know.
How often do you go on nature walks?
Well, really, whenever I have free time, you know. And it all depends what type of the year it is. I'd say in the winter time, okay, you have wildfowl coming into the lakes, and obviously that presents plenty of opportunities for watching duck, which come in the winter time. In the winter time, we have mallard, or teal, widgeon, and pochard coming in to the lakes here. And we usually set up hides and things so that the members of the club here can watch them. Then in the summer time, we have the mute swans coming into the nest, which presents a good opportunity of being able to watch them at the nest. We can put up hides again on the island in the big lake here down by the Gaines Pitches and things like that. But if you just want to go out for an ordinary walk, there are plenty of small species of birds, the normal garden birds, finches, titmice, robins, etc., which are, you know, very numerous here and give plenty of opportunities of watching them.
How many of you go out together?
Well, it's best normally to keep the numbers small because you have a better chance of seeing something if you make least noise and try and get close to things without disturbing them. Usually about 3 or 4 would be the maximum.
You're from Derry. You're going back to Derry tomorrow.
That's right, yeah.
How do you feel?
Well, it's. I find when I get down here to Glenstall, you know, it's quite a relief to get away from all the trouble and, you know, distortion of community and society. You know, it's great to be able to get amongst people who aren't biased in any way against any types of religion or anything like that. Or, you know, it's a much more free feeling to be able to walk around, you know, without having that sort of a feeling in the back of your mind of anything that might happen, you know.
Some boys in our school go deer watching, usually around 6:30 to 7:30, since that's the best time, you know. If they go down too late, well, the deer just go into hiding. There's about 30 red deer around the bog, which is at the back of our school. Some boys photograph these deer, and some excellent photographs have been taken. My name is Declan Dowdle, and I live in a Pacific island, which is about 8.2 square miles. It's about 2,500 miles off the coast of Australia, and it's a very wealthy republic since it exports phosphate, which is a very valuable mineral. It's by plane 17,000 miles from Ireland, but if you go as the bird flies, it's only about 12,000 miles, but still it's a considerable distance. I come to this school mainly because of my parents were here, at least my father was here, and also my uncle happened to be abbot here, and that's really the only reason I come here, because other schools could be a lot closer.
Yeah. You're obviously not going home for your holidays today.
No, it's a bit too long and a bit too expensive too. It's probably around about £600 there and back, and with about 3 week holiday, it takes about 4 days to get there, another 4 days to come back. So my holiday would be virtually completely gone by the time I got there and back.
You fish the lake here, in fact.
Yeah, we fish for trout. I think the best time is summer nights with flies. You can haul in quite a few fish, you know, 3 or 4 of good-sized fish, not very good-sized fish because it's only a small lake, but around about a pound and a half, and get a good breakfast out of it.
Do you cook the fish yourself?
No, we have to skin them and clean them out, and then our cook at school, Miss Brennan, kindly cooks them for us.
You fish the lakes here too?
I do fish the lakes, yes. I fish in this Chapel Lake for trout, and then there's the few other lakes. There's Big Lake, which is farther away, about half a mile, and then the Avenue Lakes. In the Big Lake, you can fish for pike, which in my second year and third year, we made several trips to Loch Gur to fish the pike, to bring them back and stock up the lake. And now the pike are breeding very well and numerous. They're very numerous now. And in the other Avenue Lakes, there it's mainly trout. They're about a pound, pound and a half. There are four lakes, only three fishing lakes. And then there's a couple of sewer lakes, but there's a stagnant lake down below, which I don't think there are any fish caught. Mainly three lakes for fishing in.
Also in the Big Lake, there was a cannibal trout caught last year, a 4.5-pounder. And we've reason to believe that there may be others, because none since that have been fished out, and there were several caught but got away. And some of the pike there have grown to be quite large, 4 or 5 pounds now, since they were put in there a couple of years ago.
My name is Brian Leggett, and I come down to this farm at Linstall Farm, usually Saturday afternoons, to get in, chip in some work with the monks. And you have always something to do here. There's never once have I been bored here. I haven't come down here now for a while, but I know every time I have come down here, there's always something to do. They have over 200 cows here, and not all of them, let's say, get milked all the time, but the amount they have, though, is quite considerable. They're bringing in new calves every day, coming in from Kerry, and they keep that total amount. We have over 500 to 600 acres, certainly not less than 500, and the cows are all set in different fields for different seasons. For the last week now, they've been planting corn down in another part of the farm, and this week they're on the potato planter. And the farm actually supplies the school with its own milk and potatoes, which is an advantage.
Brian, you come down here working on the farm all the time, and this is a new machine they've got on the farm. What exactly is this?
Well, this is their new Trojan tractor. It's in fact a silage lifter, which takes up the silage from one area of the farm to the other. Now, they used to have to shift silage by hand for 50 cows for 2 days, but this does it within about an hour. And it's completely a new idea on this farm. It's well padded inside, and it's a low-noise cab. And sooner or later, the law in here will be, in Ireland, that these will all have to be compulsory. The reason that it is low-noise is that you can fit a stereo in as well. And
there's a stereo radio playing now, in fact.
In fact, yes, we have that. And it's got cassette combined as well. Also, everything here is all fingertip. Even only tip, and everything works for you. It all looks very heavy outside, but from inside it's just nothing. There's no problem about it. And the fact is that this tractor we hopefully to have a long time. We have other tractors as well, which aren't quite full up to that extent. But from this one we hope to sort of advance on, perhaps, maybe. But it's a new toy, everybody likes it, you know, and we hope to get further on with it.
How many of the students take an interest in this?
There aren't all that many now, actually. Some of them are mainly from the country themselves. And so there used to be this. You would get people from the city who come down to look, but when it comes to work, well, it's a little bit different, you know.
And this is the CIE truck taking the trunks away. Is it your trunk is here, I expect?
It is just in front of me there, actually. I had to pack that within a rush, but it's all worth it in the end, just to get it in here and get it off to Limerick Junction, and then we don't see it till we come back into Dublin. And that's one great thing. Once we see it in Dublin, everything's finished then for a while, for at least 3 weeks, hopefully.
Thank you.
Could you explain basically what these boys are doing here?
Well, in Glenstoll, as in all other schools, it's necessary to have some form of discipline. In Glenstoll here, our main form of discipline is detention. This consists of two periods of a week, each period with a duration of an hour long. If a boy has an excess amount of detention, if he's too much, well, then he has to stay in on Sunday night, which is an extra thing for an hour and a half. While they're in detention, they sit down and they do some extra work. For the juniors, first and second years, they're given essays because they rarely have much else to do, you know, their extra hours. So we give them an essay to keep them quiet.
Who imposes the detention?
Prefects, mainly, because they take the studies. And also masters or anybody with anything to do at the school has a right to give detention.
What are you in here for?
Well, I had an hour last week for messing in study or something, talking or passing a note, and I had 2 hours, so the hours just left on to this week because I couldn't work it off all last week.
Are you habitually in detention, or what is your position?
Well, some weeks, sometimes I'd be on like 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row. Sometimes I'm off 2 or 3 weeks in a row. Just comes every now and again, get detention. So I kept out of it for about a month, and then I've been in for the past 2 weeks. Well, I suppose it has to be done, or some form of punishment, but it wrecks the Wednesday and Saturday afternoons, like cuts them all in half, having to come in here to study, because usually we have study at this time, but on Saturdays and Wednesdays we don't. And then that it's like having a study anyway, so it just cuts a day in half.
What was the maximum period you've spent in detention?
Well, about 8 hours.
What was that for?
A number of different things. I think I got 2 hours for messing in the dormitory at night, you know, pillow fights and just talking and the rest of the thing, and a couple of hours in study, passing notes, messing, whatever it is, eating.
There are not many unpleasant encounters in the round of the day. By that I mean that people are not sour, that they're open, that people don't sulk very much, that they accept whatever correction, mild corrections, come their way. And that's possibly because these corrections are made in the right way. But that they know, they feel instinctively that people are on their side. There's no sort of we-they atmosphere. But this is not very specific of this particular school. As far as I'm concerned, the attitude towards authority and the relationships between staff and boys in most schools have improved enormously over the last 10 years.
10 o'clock, Wednesday night, going home tomorrow. High spirits.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.